Let me tell the tape player. Today is May 10th, 2013. This is Rose Norman interviewing Mab Segrist via phone. And I'm now going to put it on speakerphone and put the phone next to the tape player. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, let's see. I was looking at your narrative, and it said, in brief, both Mandy and Suzanne said the song came out of the Creating Change Conference in Durham, 1993. Mandy describes organizing that at the request of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, which had lost sight of the recently planned. This is the first time Creating Change was in the South. Mandy speaks of anti-Southern bias of attendees who called asking questions about Durham. Is there an airport? Is this where Jesse Helms lived? She says that that is what led her to organize the workshop that you and the other song co-founders led, about doing social justice activism in the South, leading to what became Song. Let's see. So my memories of that, I don't remember, like, there were lots of workshops organized. So the workshop I remember, like, I mean, my part of it, I don't think any one of us originated Song, or any one of our works originated Song. But it was a conversation. And it was a conversation that was in the context of the times. It was like 93 when it began, the beginning of Clinton. You know, it was all of those initiatives all over the country, homophobic ballot initiatives that were using rapidly racist language in homophobic language in black communities to try to stir up black people, including black church people, against gay people, and pull them into a conservative coalition and so forth. So that was a set of circumstances that had concerned a lot of us who had been working for 10 years at least, if not longer, 15, in both lesbian, gay, then bi, I mean, what became LGBTQ organizing, although all those distinctions weren't so important back then, I think, at various parts, but had been doing organizing both in the left on queer issues and in LG, et cetera, organizations on broader social justice issues, race, class, gender for the men, nationality, and so forth. So in the South, we were networked with each other, and
those other organizers were networked.
Yeah, I mean, the people who eventually were the first six in Song, but there had also nationally been some efforts to pull together the queer left. And I think that one happened before Creating Change that we were somewhat drawing on, because we knew each other from various kind of national formations, including the Creating Change conferences. But there had also been a queer left conference that I think the Funding Exchange in New York and maybe Astraea had helped to organize. Kathy Acey was one of the key players. Ellen Grzynski, I think, maybe had been in the Funding Exchange at that point, but I think Kathy Acey was involved in it. Scott Nakagawa, Amber Hollabaugh, lots of people. And for the queer left conferences, we had in two different places, I think. One was in upstate New York, and I can't remember, maybe the other one was in Florida, I can't quite remember. But those were really designed to let us get to know each other, to consolidate, to see what kind of issues should be raised, and so forth. So we already knew each other a lot nationally from those conversations, from the kind of alliances that were happening within some of the nonprofit social movement pieces we were organizing on, and through Creating Change, which was a great networking networking opportunity, particularly for the kind of left part of the NGLTF coalition, which is kind of center left, whereas the the other equal mark. This is why I sometimes like to give interviews.
Majority or something. I forget.
But anyway, it was much more centrist and much more wealth-oriented to gay white donors, to get people elected in high office, and to get equality. So the left of the queer movement worked in a part of NGLTF and had access through that to conferences and programs and things like that. So then those of us in the South who had looked, who were lesbians and gay men, but mainly Song was a lesbian organization. So I had been in North Carolina, came to graduate school in 71 or 72, graduated in 72 at Duke, finished my degree in 79, but came out kind of in the middle of that, 76, 77, and got involved in seminary and also very vibrant lesbian feminist organizing at the time that was contrary to the kind of identity politics bed rap that a lot of lesbian feminism got in retrospect. It was like they were doing prison work and anti-capitalist work and in solidarity with women's prisoners and doing lots of very radical local work in the mid-70s coming out of the really revolutionary movements of the 60s. So I was very excited to come out into that and started doing seminary and helped to shape that and worked with the Seminary Collective into the 80s and then left my job at the Southern Baptist College in probably 83 and started doing anti-Klan volunteering and then started working with started putting North Carolinians Against Racist and Religious Violence in place with a coalition, very multiracial coalition. So with seminary, I had known I started getting into networks, lesbian feminist networks, lesbian networks, gay networks. And I think I met Pam McMichael in 85 when she had me, my first book, My Mama's Dead Squirrel, came out in 85. So I did some touring around that. And I had been in seminary for a while then. So some of the contacts were from seminary, from Woman Rights, which we had helped to start, been on the local first organizing committees for that. But I went to Louisville, and Pam sponsored me there, I think, in 85 for the, I can't remember the Louisville organization, but she and Carla Wallace were working with Anne Braden, anti-racist white woman, and Anne was mentoring them in a very progressive, multiracial, anti-racist movement there that they were integrating LGBTQ issues into, and at the same time encouraging the Fairness Alliance, I think Kentucky Fairness Alliance, I think that was the name of it, but I'm not sure.
I've got that from Pam.
To take anti-racist stances. So that was a connection with Pam. And I think she came to Woman Rights, too. I'm not exactly sure.
She did.
Suzanne, I met, I think, through Creating Change. I was also on the board of the National Anti-Klan Network, which became the Center for Democratic Renewal in the 80s. And I was integrating work against homophobia and heterosexism into a kind of broadly anti-racist organization and coalition at that point. Mandy was working out of Durham, as I was, through the War Resisters League and then doing various kinds of work in black communities, organizing black queer communities, and also organizing in progressive black coalitions against the kind of homophobia that the right was trying to kind of drive as a wedge issue there. Joan Garner, I think at the time, was the director of the Fund for Southern Communities in Atlanta. And Pat had been a co-chair of the National Gay and Lesbian March on Washington, maybe in 87, I'm not sure, and then had led the Olympics Out of Cobb campaign for the Olympics, not sure when that was, just whenever the Olympics were in Atlanta.
We've got an interview with her, Pat. We have an interview with Pat. Lorraine Fontana interviewed Pat this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so anyway, we were all doing this kind of stuff. I had never met Pat until that Durham Creating Change conference. So anyway, making a long story long, another one of the structures that we used were the pre-conference events to creating change. And there was a Thursday event that, and Sue Hyde was doing this for years. Sue would be an interesting person to talk to, right? She might have a different a memory on this, too. And if you wanted to do it, the archives of NGLTF, which may be online now, have some of this stuff. But Song, when Pat and, no, that would have been later. So I was just saying Song was doing that. So it was pre-Song. But I think Suzanne, there were Thursday day-long workshops around progressive issues, anti-racism, and LGBTQ movements. And the Creating Change Archives would say who did that, but it's my memory that Suzanne did a lot of that. I mean, she was very well networked. She was the oldest of us. If anybody shaped Song, it was Suzanne. Mm-hmm. And she was very well networked in NGLTF. She did those workshops for a long time. So people would come early to those workshops. So it was the progressives and the more leftists in the LGBTQ movement who would show up on Thursday and hang out and get to know each other and so forth. So I think that in terms of the Durham event, I organized, or the group that I was working with in Durham, which was Southerners for Economic Justice, which became Southeast Regional Economic Justice Network, but was working on issues of kind of globalization, which, like, by 1989, the collapse of the Soviet Union, capital just went global and started doing lots of new, strong, weird things like the NAFTA, North American Free Trade Act, and so forth. And so I had been working in the anti-Klan organization with Southern Economic Justice. And in 1992, just remembering another event, was the 500th, was the quincentenary, the 500th anniversary of Columbus's unfortunate advent in the Americas. So there had been lots of America-wide organizing around that, and the Southern Economic Justice had done maybe the first or second of a succession of annual events, gatherings, outside of Atlanta that was a quincentenary observance. And it was attended by people from Mexico and the Caribbean, and people all across the country. It was translated, as I remember it, into kind of Chinese and Spanish. And I had been working for a while then to integrate questions of sexuality in that context into race, class, gender. So there was a campaign against North American Free Trade Act as the beginning of globalization and a new kind of capitalism and so forth. So we did a workshop, I think, on that Thursday. When I say we, it's the organizations that I was working with around Southern Economic Justice, bringing that analysis of capitalism. It wasn't just an analysis of class. It was an analysis of capitalism. And I would say, as I try to remember and winnow out what contribution I might have made, it was calling the question on capitalism that we had been doing in various ways, but that brought a group of, a very mixed group, but heterosexual-led, African-American-led, working-class analysis and practice to be shared with the people, I think, on the Thursday. And then I was invited to give the keynote on Friday, or keynote on Thursday. Anyway, I did the keynote too. So the keynote is in, a version of the keynote is called The Bridge, Not a Wedge, in the back of Memoir of a Race Traitor.
Right.
So I knew that everybody's being freaked out at being South who wasn't Southern and was expecting us to be the most backward kind of folks. So I kind of gave a fairly radical critique of North Carolina, of the landscape there, of how Jesse Helms and his homophobia fit into this broader kind of racist and capitalist worldview, described going across the Mexico, U.S.-Mexico border into barrios there where people were coming to work in maquiladoras right at the border, which was really the beginnings of structural shift economy, all this kind of stuff. And I said that here I'm standing on this hill in Mexico and I've written about it and look out on this sea of cardboard houses and I think, what does this do? What does it have to do with gay people? So anyway, it was a call to really look at capitalism, look at globalization, take stands on that, understand ourselves in a material context. So, so subsequent to that, what I remember in terms of song was a very intense conversation, and I can see us. It was me, Suzanne, Carla Wallace from Louisville, Pam from Louisville, and Urvashi. And I think I have pictures, like the North Carolina Independent took a sequence, and there's a whole sequence of that conversation, very animated conversation, in which the idea of song came about. And Pam was just, she had been doing an anti-ballot initiative, I think in Cincinnati, and so she wasn't doing that anymore. So she had time, and she was a very talented organizer. So I think Suzanne was trying to think, well, what could Pam do? You know, but also we were just like, well, what can we do in the South? How can we consolidate the work that various of us have been doing in the South around the, like, the legacies and remnants of the civil rights movement and radical organizing there, the work we've done in queer movements, how can we consolidate that in the South? So we came up with the idea of a new organization. And besides Urvashi, as I recall, that conversation right then had been all white women, so it was very clear we would need a set of folks. So Joan, Mandy, and then Pat were pretty easy to come to. I hadn't known Pat, but I certainly knew Joan and Mandy. And then Mandy was doing another set of organizing, too. But that's what, I mean, to me, if the conception of song was in that conversation. Very soon it spread out from that, and people brought their various work into it. But that's my memory of what the origins of song were.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you stayed involved with it for how long, or?
Let's see, 92, okay, I don't know, probably 6 or 7 years,
uh-huh.
Maybe, you know, but I'm not sure. I was still on the board when Pat dropped out, and then there were a succession of other people. The original board saw that it needed to step down and allow for rotation. We had not been a nonprofit organization. We had only gotten grants through other people as fiscal sponsors. So there was a move towards, as I think, this can be murky, but Pam would really be the authority on this, and there should be song archives too, but 501c3 status and bringing in actual board people who had to then have more responsibility than we had been able to have. We could raise money fairly fast because of our various reputations and contacts. Mm-hmm. So, and it also started to be more predominantly people of color. So, and I rotated out somewhere in there, and I want to say towards 2000, but 90, I'm not sure, something around in there.
Okay.
But that's pretty murky.
Okay. I'm not sure if this is going to be, you know, the official history of song or anything. It really, we're just trying to get people's stories down.
Right.
And getting up, we will have heard from all six of you now, the different stories. And it's funny how, not so different, but, you know, every story has brought in something new. So I can fill in some, when I type these notes, I'm going to fill in some answers that I have from Pam McMichael's interview. I just interviewed her.
Yeah, no, I would like to go back. You know, I would like to see, I mean, another reason I'm reluctant to give interviews is when it actually gets transcribed, it's unintelligible. I don't
right.
speak in sentences. I write in sentences. I don't
yeah.
speak in sentences. But so anyway, whatever you come up with notes from mine, I'd love to see it. And then however it is getting translated, I also want to see that too, just to be sure I haven't said
yeah.
south instead of north or up instead of down or something key.
What I actually do, we haven't got anybody who's a professional transcriber. So what I've been doing is I just I take notes while we're talking, and then I go back and listen to the tape and edit my notes and just keep what I think we can use. And I do edit it, so it won't sometimes it won't be exactly what you said. It might have taken you three sentences just to say it, and I'll just condense it. Basically, I do what you would probably do if you were going to edit these notes.
Well, I do have some of this that I started writing on, so I can send those to you.
That would be good.
Yeah.
And I especially want to reference your other books for, well, we'll reference Race Trader for the Bridge Not a Wedge, and there may be some other things that you want to, you know, we're going to have footnotes, so might as well mention if there's the story of Feminary, for example. Do you tell that somewhere? Besides, there's a thesis about it, but do you tell your story of Feminary somewhere that I could footnote? Or
That's not really. There was in the North Carolina Literary Quarterly, the person who did the thesis did an article.
Okay.
And I've got the reference somewhere, and I think I've got the journal at home.
I can probably find it by search.
Yeah, and Minnie Bruce really worked very scrupulously to get the dates right and all of that and everything.
Okay.
Because you know, we were going back and forth to Atlanta. There's a bunch of very rich networks from that period, and they kind of blur together. But anyway, that would be a source of information.
Okay, North Carolina Literary Journal.
North Carolina.
Something like that. Probably if I search on her name as author. It'll come up.
Pardon?
If I search MLA on her name as author, it'll probably come up.
The
that thesis author. Okay.
I mean, I'm curious though. Like, are there contradictions or just different pieces, or like, what's the?
Well, I think I'm trying to remember which one. It's not contradictions, no. But what people remember and what sticks out in their mind. Somebody brought up the movie. I can't remember who it was. Might have been Joan Larson or Suzanne, one of them. The movie Gay Rights Special Rights. Apparently, that was being distributed widely, and that was sort of a touchstone for going out and trying to.
That's the kind of homophobic campaigns that in the black community and those electoral anti-electoral campaigns and stuff like that.
Yeah, not everybody remembered that. And also, I've been trying to put in little autobiographical things, like I got Suzanne's story about growing up in basically an all-white community outside of Atlanta, farming community. And, of course, you've told that story, your story of growing up in, you know, several ways and places, so that I don't need to go back to that. Although I did want to see, I like to ask that aha moment question. If there was an aha moment that when you realized about, oh, you had to do something about racism. I mean, I went back to Race Trader to see if the Osceola's Head story was it, and it didn't seem to be it so much as that it was part of the struggle.
I mean, partly, when pretty soon after coming out in the mid to late 70s, really coming out, not just having a closeted lesbian woman lover, not necessarily the lesbian lover. As soon as I could do that and name myself, then I could go back and articulate a race politics and locate myself. Until then, I really didn't have an explicitly anti-racist politics. I had sensibilities, I had longings, I had guilt, I had all that kind of stuff. So, so coming out was really crucial to me. And then, and you know, and then there was a very progressive community in Durham, integrated anti-racist, that I pretty soon located myself in. I do remember when I started to do the anti-Klan organizing in 1983, when I left teaching at Campbell College, no university. I realized that I had left Alabama kind of running away from racist violence, and it was time to do something about it. I mean, that was a very big aha moment for me. But my big aha moment, I call it the kind of crack in the cosmic egg, was 1963, which the 50th anniversary is coming up of desegregation of Alabama schools, including my high school. And kind of seeing these black kids walking across the breezeway where I had been mm-hmm. walking for the past 9 years of my school life, and how isolated they were, and the sense of identification with them. So mm-hmm. that probably was the biggest aha moment of my life. It's like, ooh, this is like something's really off here.
And you wrote about that somewhere. I'm remembering.
Yeah, no, that's both in. It's in Memoir of a Race Traitor. It's in, I come back to it, in Born to Belonging. It's mm-hmm. a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. And that was 1963.
Yeah.
Did you say? Because my school was not integrated until 1966.
Uh-huh. Where was that?
Lowndes County.
Yeah. Mm. That's intense, Lowndes County.
Oh, yeah.
Selma, or? Was that Selma?
Oh, no. Lowndes County, the biggest town is Fort Deposit.
With
1,500 people, that's where I lived.
Okay.
The county seat is Haynesville. That's where those people were murdered.
Okay, yeah. Let me see if I can send you. Let's see now. Well, thank you for persisting on this. So it's going to be a history of... It's the story... Like, what is... Remind me again of the focus.
It's really
a history of song. Or?
It's a the whole thing is the Herstory Project is recovering memories or memoirs. We originally wanted people to write their stories about their lesbian feminist activism in the South.
Yeah, okay. Here.
Can't get them to do that, so we're interviewing people, and mostly we're not trying to interview people who've published things about it because
right,
it's
right.
a recovery project. But there wasn't. I originally was only going to interview Mandy and Suzanne. And they all said, oh, no, you've got to get the story from... So
yeah.
So we've got all six of you now.
Yeah.
So this is just a chapter. And we really have a big book-length project here. It's over 100,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure exactly what Sinister Wisdom is going to tell us about how much and in what form they want to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Landykes chapter, we might actually just publish that with... Maze or something that they've offered to publish that separately.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't know until the summer, but I want to be able to send them somewhat edited versions of what we have. Now, I'm going to work on this immediately. As soon as I hang up, I'm going to start working on it.
I just sent you the file, so.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I will send you what I have this afternoon.
Okay.
And we'll just stay in touch over email.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.